We're doing our quick review over the book of Bereishis, and we're up to Parshas Vayetze. We saw how Yaakov stole the rights for the firstborn from Esav. He stole the blessing, not the rights, from Esav. Esav wanted to kill him. Yaakov runs to his uncle Laban, his mother Rivka's brother. And he exits Beersheba, he's en route to Haran, and he encounters the Temple Mount. God makes the sun set early, he goes to sleep, he takes the stones, puts 12 stones around his head, they unify into one stone that night. He sleeps and has a dream, and in that dream he sees the famous ladder, and the ladder goes from heaven to earth, because this is the place, the Temple Mount, that connects heaven and earth. And he sees angels going up and down the ladder, and God tells him, I am the God of Avram and Yitzchak, and I will give you the land of Israel, you and your offsprings. Your offsprings will be many like the earth of the ground, and you will expand to the north, south, east, and west, and all nations of the land will be blessed in you, and I will be with you, I'll watch you, and I'll bring you back home. I won't let you go, I'll keep an eye on you until you get back here. Yaakov wakes up, he just got that great promise, God is with him as he's en route to the infamous Laban, and he says, wow, I didn't realize this was such a holy place. And he takes the stone and he anoints it with oil. We had left off last week where Eliphaz caught up to him, and Eliphaz says, my father sent me to kill you, I got to do Kibbutz Avayim. And Yaakov tells him, you're right, you have to keep the mitzvah of your father, so a poor man is considered like he's dead. Take all my wealth, and says, no, I'm a dead man. So Eliphaz is fine, takes all his wealth, and now Yaakov is a pauper. But somehow he had a flask of oil to anoint the stone with, and he takes a vow. He says, if God will be with me, bring me back home the way he said, he'll give me to eat, he'll give me enough to dress, of clothing. So I'll take off a tithe, I'll give God a tenth. And Yaakov now travels out to Laban. He comes to the well and he sees the shepherds, and there's a huge stone on the well, and the shepherds, he asks them about Laban, they tell him everything's fine with him, and there's Rachel coming with the sheep. So he asks them, why don't you guys give the sheep to drink and go? So they say, we wait for all the shepherds together, we can't take off the stone alone. So when Rachel shows up, Yaakov personally goes off and takes the stone off the well, a stone that needed many, many shepherds. He himself could roll off the well. And he gives the sheep to drink, and he kisses Rachel, and he weeps, and he tells her that he's her uncle. And she runs home, and when Laban hears this, he runs out to greet him. He hopes, boy, he must be coming with all the wealth. He comes from a wealthy family. He comes out and sees nothing. So he figures maybe he's got his money on him. He hugs him, sees nothing. Figures maybe he's got a precious jewel in his mouth. He kisses him on the mouth, sees nothing. So he asks him, hey Yaakov, what's going on? So Yaakov tells him, you know, my nephew Eliphaz caught up to me, wanted to kill me. I just had this big row with my brother Esav. So Laban says, okay, we're family, come home. During that month, Yaakov watches his sheep. And Laban tells Yaakov, you know what, you're working here for a month. Tell me, what do you want as your wages? And Yaakov tells him, I'll work for 7 years. I want Rachel, your younger daughter. Laban agrees. After 7 years of work, they make a wedding. Laban brings in Leah, has her dressed up like Rachel. Yaakov wakes up the morning after the wedding and he sees that he married the twin sister, Leah, not Rachel. And he's surprised. He comes to Laban and he says, what'd you do to me? We agreed on Rachel. Laban says, nah, our custom is you don't marry the younger one before the older one. Finish the week of Sheva Brachas and then I'll let you marry the other sister. And after that, you'll work another 7 years for Rachel. And Yaakov is pushed to the corner. He agrees. He marries Rachel. And he works another 7 years. Yaakov has a preference to Rachel, and Leah feels it. And God makes a miracle that Leah, who really couldn't naturally conceive, conceives. And Rachel remains in her natural state, in which she cannot conceive. And Leah has the first child named Reuven, and the second child she names Shimon. And the Pesukim give us the reasons why they were given the different names. We know the stories. She stops giving birth. Rachel sees she can't have a child. She gives Yaakov the maid. He marries the maid. He has two children from the maid. Leah sees she stopped giving birth. She gives him her maid. Bilhah, Zilpah, he's married the two maids. He has another two children. And the 7 years are up, and he has approximately 10 children. Reuven uh, Rachel has a child, and he is named Yosef. Yaakov comes to Laban, and he says, my second set of years, the 7 years are up. Let me go. And Laban tells him, no, you know, things have been going well since you come here. Tell me what you want your wages to be. They make a deal. Laban retracts on the deal a million times. And after 6 years, where God constantly helps Yaakov, even though Laban keeps cheating on the deal, Yaakov is a very wealthy man. He sees that Laban has it in for him, and he sees that Laban's children are jealous of him. God tells Yaakov, time to go home. Yaakov calls his wives and says, we got to go. Laban is out shearing the sheep, and they say, we're with you. They pack up their bags and they leave while Laban's away. They're traveling, and Rachel sees that she doesn't want to leave her father with his idol worship, with the truffim. She takes the truffim with her. Truffim, just so we know, is they'd slaughter a firstborn person, and then they'd put all kinds of incantations under his tongue, and then the skull could talk. So according to some midrashim, she was concerned that if he has the truffim, he'll ask them where they're located, and with this special truffim, he'll be able to find them. So she takes the truffim with her, and they're traveling, and Laban gets word that they've gone, and Laban gives chase. He takes his band with him. Yaakov's camped on one side of the mountain, Laban camps on the other side, and he's ready to kill. Laban's coming with his band of men ready to kill, and that night God comes to Laban and tells him, don't you dare harm Yaakov. So the next morning Laban catches up to Yaakov and he says, what's going on with you? You leave without saying goodbye? You don't let me kiss my daughters and kids? You know, I had a mind to do you one over, but God showed up last night and told me not to touch you. You're lucky. But I understand you missed your family, you had to run. What'd you take my God for? So Yaakov says, firstly, I was scared you tried to cheat me or take my stuff away. And secondly, I didn't take your God. If you find anyone who has your God, gets the death penalty. We know in the seven Noahide laws, one of them is thievery. Anyone that steals deserves the death penalty. You check. No, I have nothing of yours here. And Laban starts checking all the tents. He finds nothing. Rachel gives him the excuse that it's that time of the month. And she remains seated on the camel with the truffin sitting under her. And then Yaakov has it out with Laban. He says, all these years you've been cheating me and now you chase after me. I've worked my head off for you and this is what you do to me. And Laban says, everything you see here, it's all mine. If not for me, you'd have nothing. So, yeah.
But still, it is not this penalty. If it is this penalty for stealing.
Yep. Ben Noach Sheganav Chayev Misa. Even on the Shavet Bruta, yeah. So Yaakov and Laban make a pact. They build a pile of stones and they say, and they put a sword in those stones, and they say, whoever crosses these stones to harm the other one, he will get killed by this sword. And they eat by the pile of stones. Laban blesses the children and leaves. Yaakov continues heading to Israel and is greeted by a group of angels, and that's the end of Parshas Vayetzei. Parshas Vayishlach. Yaakov is coming to the land of Israel, and he's concerned that Esav might hear he's coming. So he sends messengers to Esav, telling them, your servant Yaakov says, I'm coming back, and I want to find favor in your eyes. And when Esav hears this, he gets all riled up all over again. 20 years have passed, and Yaakov manages to rile Esav up again. Esav gathers his men, and he's headed with 400 men to come destroy Yaakov's camp. And Yaakov prepares with three things. He prepares with a plan. He divides the camp into two. So in case one camp gets destroyed, the other camp will escape. And he prepares with prayer. And he prepares with gifts. Those are the three things he prepares. He prepares for war by dividing the camps. He prepares by sending gifts to try and appease him. And he prepares with prayer. And that night, he thinks, maybe I'll run away from this whole thing. And that night, as they're crossing, he takes his wives and children, and they're crossing Ma'aval Yabok, and after he's crossed everyone over, he goes back for a few little vessels, and a man appears and fights with him all night long. They're wrestling throughout the night. We have on tradition this was the angel of Esav's. And at the end of the night, the angel tells him, let me go, it's morning. And Yaakov says, I'm not letting you go till you bless me. So the angel says, okay, I'll bless you. Your name is no longer going to be Yaakov, but Yisrael, which means the one who overcame gods. You overcame me, the angel of Esav. And the angel leaves, and during the fight, he's managed to wound Yaakov, and Yaakov is limping. And now, as the sun rises, Yaakov sees, he lifts his eyes, he's limping with his family, and he sees Esav and his camp coming towards him. He quickly sets everyone up, they come towards Esav, and everyone bows towards him. Esav sees everyone bowing towards him, and in that moment he has a change of heart. He runs towards Yaakov, falls on his neck, tries to bite him in the neck. God makes Yaakov's neck hard as stone. They both start weeping. Yaakov, because he's gotten the stiffest neck in the world, neck turned to stone for a few seconds. Esav, because he just tried taking a chomp out of solid stone. So they're both weeping over there. And Esav says, "Who are all these women and kids?" And Yaakov says, "Oh, the kids are the kids God granted me." And Esav says, "What are all these gifts you send?" Yaakov says, "No, I want to find favor in your eyes." Esav says, "Oh, I have so much." Yaakov says, "I have everything I need. You take it." Esav says, "Come, let's travel together." Yaakov says, "No, I got women, children. We can't travel at that pace." Esav says, "I'll leave you some of my men to help you out." Yaakov says, "No, thanks. I'm okay." Esav travels his way. Yaakov travels his way. He comes to Shechem, and he has to thank God he made it in peace. He's made it to Shechem, and he makes a special institution. He builds infrastructure. He initiates a coin to help the economy of the place. A token of thanks. God helped him make it back in peace, so he does something for the public. His daughter gets abducted by Shechem. She's raped. They come to Yaakov and they ask him to agree to let Shechem marry her. Yaakov is very bitter. His two children tell Shechem and the people, "We could only make a treaty if you guys circumcise." They circumcise, they agree, they convince the whole city. 3 days after the circumcision, they're lying writhing in pain, cursing themselves for having agreed. The two kids walk in and they say, "We gotta check up on everyone." So they come to the families and they say, "Shh, you guys gotta let them rest. We're going in, we're just checking up on each one." They walk into the bedroom where all the men are sleeping, and one by one they slaughter them and they kill all the men of the city. And by the time anyone knows what hit them, everyone's dead. They come into the palace, they take their sister, they gather up all the people that are left in the city, and they destroy the whole city and take all the loot. Yaakov hears this and says, "You guys are nuts. They probably had peace treaties with other countries. They're going to come and attack us. Everyone's going to think that we're trying to conquer city after city. They know we have a promise we're supposed to get the land of Israel. Once you've done this, all the other nations will feel threatened. You guys are just endangered everyone's lives." And they say, what choice do we have? Is Archan's sister going to be like a woman for hire?" So God appears to Yaakov and says, "Come, you know why you're having all these troubles? You didn't keep your promise. You promised to give a donation, a tenth. The person who delays his donation has trouble in his families. You better keep your donation." So Yaakov purifies his camp, gets rid of all the idols they took in the loot, and they travel up to Beit El. When they come to Beit El, God blesses him again and gives him the name of Yisrael. Now it's given by God directly. And God tells him, "You're still going to have kings come out of you. And you're going to inherit this land of Israel." Yaakov sets up a place of worship over there. And his wife Rachel starts giving birth as they're traveling. And she has trouble at childbirth. And she passes away during childbirth. And it's a very bloody death because it's during childbirth. So he can't carry her to any normal place of burial. He sets up a tomb in its own place. He sets up the Kever Rachel, the burial place of Rachel. And it's God has it that way so that when we're led to exile, ultimately we will pass by her. We passed by her burial place and prayed by her. And she was the powerful one who could come and convince God to help us out. When she passes away, there's a vacuum. Who's going to be Yaakov's primary wife? And Yaakov takes her maid instead of Leah. Reuven, Leah's daughter, Leah's son, tries to rectify things. He takes his father's bed and moves it to his mother Leah's tent. Tries to fend for his mother's honor. It's considered a great disrespect. And Reuven is going to spend the rest of his life trying to atone for that sin. The parasha ends with a recounting of the leaders of Esav up to the kings of Esav till the period of Moshe Rabbeinu. We have all the different kings of Esav. And Chazal tell us the reason Esav merited to have so many kings before we had a leader was because of all the times that Yaakov bowed to Esav, that he put his head down before Esav. And that brings us to Parshas Vayeshev, where we'll pick up as much next week.